Hello, everyone. I'm Bill Roggio. I'm a senior fellow at Foundation for Defense of Democracies and editor of FDD's Lone War Journal. This is Generation Jihad, the podcast that covers all things in what used to be known as the global war on terror, but we now call the Long War. Today is Monday, so my friend, colleague, and co-host here at Generation Jihad, Joe Drusman, joins us. Joe is a senior research analyst at FDD's Lone War Journal, where he focuses primarily on Palestinian terror groups, Hezbollah, and all of the goings-on in the Middle East. Joe has a great knowledge of the militias as well. Joe, happy Monday.
Hey, Bill. Happy Monday. And a lot's going on, that's for sure.
Sure is. We got a lot to talk about today. We'll talk about the Biden administration's humanitarian aid pier, President Biden's red line on Rafah, an Israeli operation there. Israel attempted to go after a high-value target. And, you know, look, Ramadan started. Hamas isn't budging. There is no temporary ceasefire. We'll talk about the likelihood, if all things stay the same, of ceasefire happening and Israel getting its hostages back. But first, we'll start today off with the pier. Everybody seems interested in that story. That came out during this, well, actually before the State of the Union, I guess the trial balloon was floated. President Biden wants to build a pier off of the coast of Gaza. Well, it would connect to Gaza and humanitarian aid would flow through there. This is quite an undertaking. I'm hearing it might take anywhere from 1 to 2 months for this to be completed. And then you have the logistics issue, pushing through millions of food packages a day into Gaza. And then who the hell is going to secure this thing? But President Biden says there'll be no U.S. troops on the ground. Will there be U.S. troops on the pier? Is the pier the ground? Who is the aid handed off to? Is it Hamas? Is it Palestinian civilians? Who's going to provide security? You know, things are pretty desperate. Desperate, hungry people tend to do things like, hijack convoys that are moving through. So maybe they might flock to a pier to get to that aid. How is that going to be secured? Joe, certainly been an interesting couple of days when it comes to this. You know, I'm going to add one other point here as well. You know, President Biden is clearly doing this. It's hard for me to estimate at this point, you know, how much of this is his dislike of, and it seems to be very clear at this point in time, his dislike of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and how much of this is, you know, genuflecting to a voter base here in the United States that would be Muslims primarily, or the pro Hamas faction. Why not? Let's call them that. If you seem to be, you know, have questions about the war in Ukraine, you're pro Putin. So if you support providing aid and to Palestinians, does that make you pro Hamas? Anyway, I'll get off my horse there. You know, I'm just wondering how much of this is driven by domestic political considerations and dislike for Prime Minister Netanyahu. But I have a, you know, certainly for President Biden, if Netanyahu disappeared from the scene tomorrow, he'd be hard pressed to find someone who isn't going to consider the policies that are in place right now. It's a unity government. Israeli politicians, the mainstream politicians, all who are involved in that government, including some who are opposition members to Netanyahu, are supportive of the operation in Gaza and are supportive of an Israeli operation to clear Rafah, which we'll get to in a bit. Joe, enough of me talking. What do you think about all this? Who's going to provide security at this pier? That's what I really want to know. Oh, and by the way, what happens if there's an attack on U.S. forces?
Yeah, no, very good question. I've been thinking the same thing the last few days. You know, so all this is, unless I state otherwise, all of this is based on a lot of assumptions that I'm making. But I imagined, because a lot of things happen behind closed doors and never reached the view of the public, that imagine Qatar is probably telling Hamas, hey, you know, please don't fire on the pier. Please tell your allies, don't fire on U.S. troops. Just like with the aid drops, right? These are cargo planes that have been flying low over Gaza. These are big, fat targets. They haven't been shot at least that we know of, right? I haven't seen anything. So I imagine there's some tacit coordination going on there behind the scenes, right? Of course, you know, the United States is not going to say, we're coordinating with Hamas. Don't worry, they're not going to shoot at us. Maybe they are indirectly, you know? Maybe they're telling Qatar to tell Hamas. So
Joe, and what about this? What if it isn't Hamas? What if it's a small Palestinian faction that wants to extract a pound of flesh? The reality, look, we've talked on this program and we use Hamas as a shorthand for all of these groups. There's Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and you could recite these far better than I. It's like Pakistani terror groups, right? There's just a plethora of them.
Right.
You know, look at the U.S. evacuation at the airport in Kabul, right? The Islamic State carried out that attack. I have questions whether the Taliban provided a permissive environment for them. I believe that's the case. But let's just take it all at face value and say that it was the Islamic State doing it on its own. The point is there are so many variables in such a chaotic situation that maybe this isn't one, particularly if Hamas is weakened, that it can't, may not be able to handle it. And what if it's just civilians bum rushing the comic? Anyway, didn't mean to interject there, Joe. Let's, you know, but it's, you know, these are the things. I hope they're thinking about these things, because I hate to get, you know, the vibe of Mogadishu 1993 or Beirut, you know, 1982. Where, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, and the road, you know, to, you know, feel goodism, providing humanitarian aid, can, you know, that road is also paved with good intentions as well.
Exactly. Same. Those are my thoughts. We'll say this, and I do want to, I think it's something to emphasize. There's nothing bad with providing assistance to those who need it. Okay. We're not saying that it's bad. I think Palestinians do need the assistance, specifically civilians. But this is just what we're watching is, a huge problem, you know, appearing before our eyes, like all the bad things that can happen. Of course, so let's say it's not even Hamas that attacks the pier. There's a bunch of other organizations, right? Some of them do fall under Hamas's sphere of influence, but some don't. Some are Salafist groups. Some are real hardcore jihadists that identify with Al-Qaeda or that identify with the Islamic State, for example. These guys would love to get a piece of the United States as far as trying to attack them either with mortars or whatever. Regardless.
Joe, let me interject on that real quick. You know, that also gives Hamas the plausible deniability. If it is the jihadist group, they can provide that permissive environment. They can look the other way. We didn't know. It wasn't us. We didn't stop it. Mm-hmm. These are the things. I don't think these things are being thought through properly. Sure, Hamas is the big player in Gaza, but it isn't the only player, and particularly as the group's been weakened through Israeli operations. Yeah. And as these groups grow more and more angry at the U.S. for its role in supporting Israel. These are all possibilities. Is it a high degree? Am I saying this is 90%, 80%, 50%? I don't know what that percentage it is, but it certainly makes me very uncomfortable. Has this administration stated what would happen? There was an interview I saw out there where from the Pentagon, and they said, well, our hope is that nothing happens. Well, hope isn't a strategy here.
No.
I hope it doesn't either, but what's your plan for if it does? Have you even thought about that? That's what really scares me, Joe, particularly after what we witnessed in Afghanistan. They still refuse to recognize that the withdrawal and then the subsequent evacuation was an absolute debacle. This administration, I understand it, so it does it for domestic political considerations. No one's been held accountable. There's been zero self-reflection on what went wrong in Afghanistan. And the same people that ran that operation are going to run this operation. And when you don't learn lessons, you're destined to repeat the same mistakes again and again, and they'll come at the cost of the lives of American servicemen and women.
Right. I mean, I just can't imagine a scenario where the United States is going to attack Gaza if something were to happen, right?
Right.
I just don't, there's no way. It's just the political climate right now, especially, they're not going to do that. So yeah, why put yourself in this position, right? Where you open yourself up to an attack. I mean, yeah, the Israelis are there for sure. They're probably gonna, I'm just imagining here, I don't know for sure, but they'll probably put this pier northern Gaza, right, where the Israelis are located. And I hate that using that word again, but hope for the best. But I don't know why, like, this is such a dangerous situation, right? And so many things can go wrong, and the administration doesn't seem to really talk about that for obvious reasons, right? So,
I mean, I'd like to think they've planned for it, but look, you know, again, I hate to be so Afghanistan focused, but there's very clear, very recent lessons. They were not prepared to conduct that emergency evacuation of Kabul. They did not order that until a week before Kabul fell, when, you know, people like me and Tom Joslin and several others were sitting there in May and June and saying, this is falling apart. You need to get them out now. If they couldn't see it and they couldn't execute it, what makes me think they're going to get this one right? And, you know, okay, there's a lot of points we could make here. You know, if the administration is doing this because it thinks it's going to make people that are angry at the U.S. or its support of Israel, that's going to appease them, they're absolutely wrong.
Yeah,
Hamas is going to take this aid and distribute it and get the credit for it and still hate the U.S. And as is the people, no matter what this administration does, as long as it's providing weapons to Israel and providing Israel political cover at the U.N., the U.S. is going to be an enemy of the Palestinian people to them. And yeah, and by the way, what do we get in return from this? Do we get our six hostages back? No, that's not going to happen. And this is the absurd part of it and the really disgraceful part of it all to me. Can we get something in return for helping, you know, aid get pushed through to Gaza and establishing this? When do we get them back? Why are we acceding to everything that what Hamas wants and getting nothing in return?
Yeah, I imagine that's the argument that the Israelis are making. Maybe in private conversations with their American counterparts, but you know, Biden's doing this because of pressure, right? I mean, and then on top of that, he quoted his 30,000 Palestinians killed figure, you know, that's published by Hamas's health ministry. He said it last night in an interview, and it's kind of crazy. It just shows you that if Hamas publishes these, how far Hamas propaganda can go, right? Now, I'm not saying people have died or anything like that. Of course, a lot of Palestinian civilians have died. But when people think 30,000, they just think these are just civilians. Oh no, there's a lot of fighters in there too. And President Biden mentioned that, right? So anyway, so there's just a lot of just what are you thinking type of things going on here. Right? I don't know. The Biden administration was very good at first, at the beginning of the war. They were very supportive. Now, you know, I don't know. It's like they think that Israel is going to stop, you know, or going to acquiesce to a permanent ceasefire, you know, but they're so close to eliminating Hamas, right? They're as close as they've ever been. They're not going to stop. I'm sorry. They're not. At least I haven't seen any signs of it. But anyway.
That takes us to the next question, Joe. President Biden over the weekend in an interview publicly stated that Israel going into Rafah, the city along the border, large city on the border with Egypt, and really the last bastion for Hamas, he said that Israel going in there is a red line for him. Prime Minister Netanyahu for Israel said that another October 7th happening is Israel's red line. So clearly the two are at odds. If you're Hamas, if you're Iran, if you're Hezbollah, and you see this, are you sitting back and saying, we need to drag this out longer, as long as we can? The divisions are here.
Yeah.
Isn't this, in a sense, providing, sending all the wrong messages to these groups?
Yeah, and I've been just, when I see that type of reporting and these comments and all sorts of stuff, but these leaks from the Biden administration, I'm just, you know, I'm just like, why are you saying this? Because you're just aiding the enemy, right? You're aiding Hamas and Iran and all its, you know, proxies and clients. It's just, I don't understand. Regardless, it's a huge problem. But just like when I was in Israel in January, I said it previously in this podcast, the Israelis are determined. All right, it's gonna take a lot for them to. I just don't know what kind of scenario could present itself, you know, that would stop the Israelis from going into Rafah short of Hamas just surrendering. All right. And this is including political pressure from the United States and all sorts of everything else going on. Right. So I just don't see them stopping. They may take the time during Ramadan to evacuate the civilians out of Rafah. All right. I think that would be smart.
Where to, Joe?
Yeah, where to? There's where to? Yeah, that's the big question. I mean, I've heard there's like these tent cities, like they were going to like move them to another spot in Gaza, but
have the Israelis been preparing sites, like bulldozing sites, preparing cities, anything like that?
I don't know.
I haven't seen any reporting of it. If that's the Israelis, that's what I'd be doing.
Yeah, they probably do. I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of talk. Like, there's just rumors. You know, some people thought, okay, well, maybe they'll try to move some of them to the northern Sinai. But Egypt would obviously have to be okay with that. And I doubt they would be. So
the last thing the Egyptians want are the Palestinians dirtying their soil, so to speak. Yeah. I got to tell you one thing I learned about my travels through the Middle East is just how dislike the Palestinians are among wide segments of the Muslim population that I met. I think that a lot of the support the Palestinians got is just because of Israel and not because of a like for the Palestinians, but a dislike of Israel. But that's neither here nor there. I do not expect the Egyptians are worried that once the Palestinians are out of Gaza, that the Israelis will never let them back in. And then there'll be an Egyptian problem. And frankly, I don't blame the Egyptians.
Yeah, that's a legitimate concern, right? I understand. So, but I don't know. It's difficult to say for sure. But it's a real cluster, to be honest with you. But nevertheless, Israel's going to go into Rafah. Okay,
yeah,
they're going in. They're not going to stop. So, despite what Biden may say on a hot mic or in an interview or behind closed doors, that's just my feeling.
Yeah, I'm with you. They have to. I don't think that this government or any minister within it would survive politically in Israel if the job isn't finished. Look, I have a lot of questions about what Gaza looks like, post Rafah, post this military operation, which is, by the way, isn't going to end with Rafah, but that the tunnels and the networks, the fortifications that Hamas has built over the years has to be dismantled. This is, I had a conversation with a former military officer and he was asking me, why not a counterterrorism operation? Of course, he knew the answer and he just wanted to hear me say it. And the answer is because you can't dismantle hundreds of miles of tunnels and bunkers and things of that nature and fight against 20,000 Hamas fighters, 20, 30,000 fighters, whatever the number is, using counterterrorism operations. It required a military operation to clear them. Rafah requires a military operation to clear them. We could argue over, was Israel too destructive in its operations? My position is this is war and this is what war looks like. And if you don't want a war, don't start one. And if Hamas really cared about civilians in Gaza, it can end this war immediately. All it has to do is surrender. That the responsibility for the lives of Palestinian civilians is on Hamas and Hamas's decision.
Exactly. So we've been saying from the beginning.
Exactly. Yep. It's an easy answer, but somehow Israel is being held accountable for this. I thought that was interesting. Netanyahu's comments were quite appropriate, saying that October 7th is Israel's red line. He's absolutely correct. No other country in this planet would have taken proportionally what the Israelis took on October 7th.
Oh, yeah.
And oh, yeah. Not launched into, when I talk to friends here and I say, well, what would happen if 20,000 Americans were killed in over the border cartel raids and our women and children were hauled across the border and kidnapped and raped and mutilated. How would we feel? And, you get a lot of silence from those who want this war to stop. People just don't think about, this is why countries have militaries. This is why they have governments, is to protect them from things like this. And for when things like this happen to get a solution to those problems. Hamas surviving isn't the solution, and the Israelis would be crazy. Again, Joe, I don't know what Gaza looks like post major military operations over in Gaza. Mm-hmm. But I know that we can't, if the Israelis do a permanent ceasefire from here on out and Hamas survives, that the, that red line of October 7th could be crossed again. Maybe not a year, 5 years or 10 years in the future. But if I'm Hamas, mm-hmm. I'm looking to do it again because they'll have gotten away with it.
Yeah, I mean, the cycle of violence will just repeat itself over and over again. I mean, we're just back to step one. If Hamas stays in power, that's it. All of us wouldn't say it's for nothing, but it would definitely seem like it. So, nevertheless, yeah, it's they have to, Israel has to get done, you know, finish off Hamas, essentially, take away, strip its governing abilities, strip its military. Those are the big goals for the Israeli military. And of course, getting back the hostages.
Absolutely. And also go and killing these major leaders of Hamas. So there was an Israel attempted an attack against a high value target. Joe, tell us, who was it? Did they get him? Well, what do we know?
Right. So, so this is, from what we know, at least, since the war started, one of the highest ranking members of Hamas that Israel has tried to kill. I mean, we've seen reports of them try to go after Sinwar. I don't know if they're credible, but this one is definitely credible. So they tried to, either it was yesterday or a few days ago, can't remember exactly, but there was an airstrike in the central Gaza Strip, and the Nusayrat camp. And, they were targeting Marwan Issa. Marwan Issa is, he's the number four guy in Gaza. Okay. You can interchange them, to be quite honest with you. He is, the deputy leader of Hamas's, so-called military wing. Okay. The Al-Qassam Brigade. He's number two to Mohammed Deif, which is, a guy that Israel definitely wants as well. Nevertheless, this guy's a bad guy. This is a bad dude. So if there was, I'll put it like this. If you want to think who could have planned this, the October 7th attack, or who would have been involved, it would have been Marwan Issa as well. Okay. So let's just say that, it's highly likely he was involved. And just because of his stature and his rank within Hamas. So, and he does other things for Hamas, but within Hamas, he does some stuff with the, I guess you could say, the political bureau, but it's more military. He's more military, more than anything. The Israelis admitted, they acknowledged it. At first, it came out in reports earlier today, and then the IDF published something just right before we got on, actually, published video of the airstrike. And it was interesting, Netanyahu published a video just saying that he was kind of cryptic. He was saying that Israel was going to get the leaders of Hamas, whether you're number four, you're number three, two, or one. Okay. So it was, but he never mentioned, but it was just the timing of it, right? The timing of for him to do it today when these reports are coming out is just kind of like, oh, I think you're hinting at something. So, we don't know if Issa was killed. Probably, hopefully, maybe, who knows? Because he was in a tunnel, okay? That's what the Israelis were saying. They attacked a tunnel system underneath the central Gaza Strip. You know, something like that. These things are tens of meters deep, you know? It could take days. It could take weeks to find these guys. So,
if they used explosives, they're going to have to dig them out.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to dig these guys. That's what happened. I mean, I remember in 2021, the Israelis, they hit a Nukba force, which is like an elite commando unit of Hamas, in a tunnel. All right. They were digging these dudes out weeks after. Okay. After it happened, they were finding them. And nevertheless, it's, so we'll see. We'll see if they got him. It would be very good, accomplishment or achievement for the Israelis to have gotten to the number three or number four guy. Cause it's just another warning, right? It's, to the other leaders. Cause look, Israel already got Salah al-Aruri in Beirut in the beginning of January. So there's him. See Marwan Issa now, hopefully. And then you got the other guys. There's still Yahya Sinwar, his brother Mohammed Sinwar, and of course, Mohammed Deif. And there's some other guys as well. But those are the guys that Israel's trying to get there. They're still in Gaza, at least. So we'll see. You never know. A lot of times we see all these reports. Oh, people get, they get excited. Oh, you know, Israel got him. Then we find out later, oh, no, he's still alive. And I've seen that so many times over the years. I mean, I'm sure you have
too. Oh, listen, I think our listeners are tired of hearing this. This is how they're vampires.
Right.
Until you drive a stake through the heart, drop off the head, and expose them to sunlight, you can't be sure that they're dead. I mean, how many times is Deef? I mean, I've seen this so much with Al Qaeda, and you answered my question, next question, Joe, which was, Who is above it? And you provided. It's good stuff. They're vampires. You're exposing the sunlight. That's like getting the DNA test.
Seriously.
Driving the stake through the heart. That's the strike to get them, and chopping off the head is the confirmation. That's what the people are so impatient too. They're so quick to run. One of the things, Joe, I cut my teeth on was the tracking the drone strikes, right? Pakistan. Against Al Qaeda and Taliban. And I remember when Haki Mullah Massoud, who was the second leader of the movement of the Taliban in Pakistan, he was reported to have been killed. And he was reported to be killed in like three or four different ways, in a feud, in a drone strike, by the Pakistani military, by an angry cousin. And they were all on different dates, and everyone ran with it and said, he's dead, everyone. And I'm the only one sitting out there saying, look, he may be, but we have a lot of conflicting information here. And no, there are no confirmation from the terrorist groups, which at that time were very quick to claim martyrdom. And they're a little more circumspect now at times. Zawahiri being a big one, right? They still haven't announced his death almost 2 years later. And he was dead for a couple of months, according to everyone. I'm the only person out there publicly saying, not sure about this guy. We haven't announced a replacement. And then there's the Times Square plot and to blow up Times Square. And I get an email from a Taliban spokesman, media person, with video of both him as well as the lead suicide bomber trainer for the movement of the Taliban in Pakistan. And they're telling me, hey, look at this. He's alive. And I had proof that he was alive, as well as the attacker wasn't an actual right-wing extremist, which the Obama administration was telling us about Times Square from 2012. So you have to be really patient with these things. I didn't mean to go off on a whole tangent there, but that's why they're vampires, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he was dead to everyone. And what, did he come back from the grave three different times to be killed three different ways?
In 2014, at least with Dave in 2014, they thought they killed him, but they only injured him and he survived. But these guys, they live like this. They live like rats. It sucks, but for them at least. But
they're in the shadows and like vampires don't really know. Got to get that coffin and get it out of there.
So we'll see. We'll see. I'll say this: Hamas hasn't. They haven't published like a list of fighters that have been killed. Only important ones. A very few. Okay, even the important ones. There's only a very few that they've published during this war that have been, so-called martyred. But if Issa is dead and they cannot, it's obvious, I think they will. I'd be pressed for them not to say anything about it. So I think
they have to celebrate him as a hero of the resistance of jihad. It's important to them.
It is. He was a major, I should say he is right now, because I don't know he's dead. He's a major player within Hamas. He was a part of the Shalit deal. He's been in there for a while. So I imagine they won't keep it a secret if he is dead. But I think we'd probably find out from, the IDF or whatever, the prime minister first, before we would hear from Hamas that Issa's in fact dead. But who knows if that's going to happen, who knows?
Joe, one last question on this before our final question. If he is indeed has been killed in a tunnel in Gaza, what is the likelihood that Dave and other top leaders are still alive?
Yeah, no, I think so.
And not just alive, but in Gaza.
In Gaza, yeah, that's another thing. I mean, that's the problem. We've talked about it, We've talked about them trying to run to the Sinai, for example, using the tunnels, the tunnel system between Gaza and Egypt. So I don't know. So far, I think these two, like Sinwar and Dave, I think that they're not the type to run, but they may, that's just my general feeling. But it definitely puts pressure, if Issa's dead, definitely puts pressure on Hamas, puts pressure on Sinwar. So that's what they want, because the more pressure you can put on these guys, you could get a possible permanent a ceasefire deal, at least a temporary one for hostages, so that may work. So we'll see, though. I just don't know yet, to be quite honest.
So Ramadan has, the Muslim holiday of Ramadan has started. That ceasefire deal that President Biden so badly wanted It's still not on the table. Hamas has taken a very consistent stand on this. They're saying it's not a temporary ceasefire. It would have to be a permanent ceasefire. Israel would have to withdraw its forces. And it's going to ask for an exorbitant amount of Palestinian prisoners to be freed in exchange for the hostages there. Israel certainly isn't going to agree to not one of these terms, in my estimation. I don't even think it could get away with a lopsided hostage deal. Anything more than like a 1-2 or 1-3 just doesn't seem to, you know, in favor of the Palestinians is going to work, in my estimation. What do you think the likelihood of Hamas softening its stance on the in order to obtain a ceasefire agreement?
Right. And I did it twice now in this in our talk. I kind of jumped ahead, but forgive me.
It's okay.
The pressure again, maintaining pressure on Hamas, the Hamas's leaders, right? So finding them, proving that the Israelis have the intelligence capabilities to find guys like Marwan Issa and hopefully others. So I think that'll be a factor to soften the stance. But I think right now, whoever's calling the shots in the end is Sinwar, right? He's the guy in Gaza. So he's the one with the hostages, or at least most of them, or the majority of them. I wouldn't be surprised if there's some, maybe a few out there that are being held by other terrorist organizations and criminals or private citizens. I mean, we got to remember, citizens, they're Palestinians, went in there that seemingly weren't a part of, connected to any, you know, terrorist organization. And they took bodies, they took people, right? So nevertheless, this is why Rafah is important, right? It's another component to it. Rafah is important because obviously you want to destroy the remaining Hamas battalions there, but it also serves as a way to continue putting the pressure on Hamas to negotiate, right? Because what Hamas has been saying is no ceasefire until the Israelis withdraw from Gaza, okay? No, it has to be a permanent ceasefire. The Israelis are saying there's no way we're doing that. And then there's other stipulations as well, but that's the big one. That's the one that's really hanging things up, that Israel is not going to stop fighting, right? They'll pause for 6 weeks, all right? If it means getting hostages, they'll do that, but they'll continue. So I think that's the biggest hang up of everything here. Israel just needs to, the intelligence agencies, right, just needs to continue putting pressure on Hamas, right? Softening their stance by taking Rafah, and also, of course, putting pressure on the leaders that they're getting to them, right? They need to show that they're getting to them. So we'll see. But I think that's the main crux here. That's the main issue that's going on. So I don't think anything is stalling right now. Okay. Maybe the ceasefire talks, yeah, but at least Israel's military operations still going. People just have to remember this is going to, and Israel said this from the beginning. Israeli officials have said this from the beginning. We've said this from the beginning. It's going to take a long time. All right. This is going to take a long time to root out Hamas and its partners in the Gaza Strip. But we're seeing positive changes here. We're seeing less rockets into southern Israel from the Gaza Strip and definitely not seeing cross-border attacks. So as far as, you know, fighters or anything like that. So it's working. Whatever Israel is doing is working. It just takes time. Unfortunately, there's a lot of people, a lot of entities, countries, allies that are putting a lot of pressure on Israel and making things difficult for them, unfortunately.
Yeah, we said from the beginning, Joe, that Israel, if it wants to see this through, wants to have a chance of succeeding, it's going to have to take time. And the time wasn't on Israel's side, but Israel has, I think, negotiated the time issue far better than I thought they would. I do think we're starting to see cracks in that with the Biden administration, but there's, you know, look, whatever President Biden thinks about, you know, his base and the dislike or not lack of support for Israeli policies, the majority here in this country still supports Israel. So he has to be careful how he walks that line and how he's perceived. I think if given the chance, and again, I could only, you know, just my opinion, if given him the chance, I think President Biden would abandon Israel, despite his talk at the beginning. I always felt that was skin deep, and that as this war got more uncomfortable for this administration, as it experienced, because one thing that the Biden administration doesn't like, it doesn't like being, you know, disliked in the international realm, in the NGO world, and, you know, in places like that. And, you know, fervent support of Israel, you know, puts you at odds with those individuals, and that causes headaches.
It does, absolutely. That just shows how political pressure works, and Hamas understands this, right? So that's what they've known forever. And that's why if they can't defeat Israel on the battlefield, which they can't, they have their allies, right, use other means with, you know, all these protests and all that nonsense going on. And it puts this political pressure on the United States and other countries, and of course on Israel. So I don't know. I don't know who's going to win this, to be quite honest with you. But so far, Israel, at least on the battlefield, Israel is winning. But things can definitely change.
Yeah, as long as Israel keeps its unity domestically and doesn't receive too much more pressure from the United States, it can maintain this. And it can be, again, we'll have to see how things shake out post-war. But I do think Hamas can be dealt a real blow. If they are eliminated, by and large, their rank and file is diminished significantly, and its leadership is diminished significantly. It's going to be hard for Hamas to reorganize. It's hard to see how Palestinians would support Hamas if they want to go through that again, what they just experienced. All of those things factor in. But that's certainly a question for the future. It certainly bears watching. Joe, thanks for the conversation today at Generation Jihad.
Always, always, Bill. Till next time.
Yeah, real pleasure, Joe. And thanks, everyone, for listening to today's episode of Generation Jihad. Just a reminder, you can listen to us on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Please subscribe to Generation Jihad and leave us a review, preferably a positive one, but only if we earned it. Thanks again. We'll see you all again real soon.